Welcome to Movie Moments, discussing the greatest movies of all time. Plus, all the newest films in theaters and streaming. Like us, rate us, share us. Here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
Hey, we are back with another edition of Movie Moments. I am Mike Rags with my good buddy Chuck Curry. Lots going on in this edition of the show as we inch closer to Halloween. We've got a special guest towards the back end of the show, and that's Matthew Lillard, of course, the star of Scooby-Doo and Summer Catch, and of course, the first Scream movie. He was one of the serial killers, spoiler alert. We'll talk to him about his new product he's got and his movie career as well, as Chuck got a chance to sit down with Matthew Lillard, special guest of the show, and we're going to go through the Scream franchise and sit down and go through the six movies. One just came out earlier this year. And of course, we can't forget about the TV series that popped up for a little while on MTV. We'll go through that. We'll go through some other movie news as well. But let's bring him in right now. It's our good buddy, Chuck Curry. Chuck, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing really good. You know, when you brought up the Scream synopsis, I got to be honest, I never did a TV show that was on MTV. I believe I'm mostly familiar with the theatrical movies, not the TV show.
No, we'll talk about theatrical more than TV. That's for sure. A little bit later on in the show, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the big news in movie theaters. And the movie hasn't even come out yet, Chuck. The pre-sale tickets for Taylor Swift's Eras Tour movie, a concert movie, comes out next week, is just beyond belief. It's already past the $100 million mark worldwide. $26 million, the single day ticket sales when it was released, which blew past Spider-Man, one of his home movies. I think it was the first one. But Chuck, Taylor Swift is the king of all media, or the queen of all media, as she's going to dominate the movie theaters. And it's great for business. It's great for the industry. And it's really quite remarkable how many people have already bought tickets.
Oh, it's incredible. You know, CNN did a story quoting Cinemark, which I believe is the number one theater chain, which is showing that film, saying it's their highest presale film of all time. And if you look, you know, and think about the Avengers Endgame and movies like that, that this will surpass that. I mean, Barbie obviously had great presales, and we know how that film ended. I mean, I don't see this having the month long legs, but who knows? I mean, I could see this. I literally could see this opening domestically, which means U.S. and Canada, at $150 million plus. And I'm going to go on record and say that's what this is going to do. I mean, it's going to do $150 million plus. I mean, the ticket sales higher, like $28 and change. But it's going to, I mean, she doesn't need any more publicity, but she is about as hot as a celebrity talent could be. There's no doubt about that.
I have a feeling it's going to maintain this. We might see some Titanic numbers here. It's going to stay number one for a while. I think this is going to be playing through the holidays. I mean, this is the type of movie where people just keep going back and seeing it. Generation. Probably. It spans all generations.
A fan base will enjoy multiple viewings. I got to ask you a question since you know a little bit more about the music industry than I do. You have the Beatles, you have Elvis Presley, you have the Rolling Stones, pop culture phenomenons that really transcended music alone. Is she right there?
Yeah, I would put her basically in the top five, no doubt about it. I mean, just the way she could just generationally, you can't chink her armor at all either. There's nothing bad. There's no scandals. Kids love her, adults love her, African Americans love her, white people. It spans. She was a country artist too, so she's a singer songwriter. So she's got that audience as well. I mean, even the NFL, she's dominating too now. I was telling you know, they offered her free advertisement for her games that she went to because they knew she was bringing new viewers to their product. So the NFL,
and here's
they don't give away
that
free stuff.
No, not at all. I mean, that's unheard of. You just said that. And I'm like, I've never heard that before. And here's the proof is in the pudding. Sunday Night Football, Chiefs with Travis Kelce, her new boyfriend, and the Jets, 29 million viewers, the highest rated Sunday Night Football game since the Super Bowl, simply because she's sitting in the press box and, you know, the camera's going to show her three to five times during the game, and a fan base eats that up. I guess it's fun. Listen, as a football fan, it is entertainment, and her being in the Prescott,
it sort of supersedes
the game itself, but it's what the NFL wants. I mean,
you know what she does? She makes every game she's at the Super Bowl, really. All she'd have 100%. To do is
very interesting.
She never even had to perform at the Super Bowl. She's bigger than the Super Bowl. Like, they've never even asked her to do a Super Bowl because she doesn't even need to do the Super Bowl. It's just quite remarkable. And I think it is. I'm with you. I think it's terrific. I think it's a squeaky clean story that America probably needs more than ever now. So go to the theaters and go see it. And her music's really good too. It really is. It's 8,500 cinemas across 100 countries, and it's coming out next week. And I'm telling you, Chuck, I just got a feeling it's going to be number. I know, you know, Five Nights at Freddy for Halloween and all that stuff's coming out. I just can't see any movies coming out this fall that's going to knock this off, because people are just going to keep going back and seeing it, even with the higher ticket prices. Now, people are going to the theaters this weekend to see a movie that I don't know if you and I we're lukewarm on it to begin with, but The Exorcist opens, pretty poor reviews, 23% at Rotten Tomatoes right now. Let's talk about this a little bit, because, you know, William Friedkin himself, before he passed away, not a fan of it. David Gordon Green, the power he's gotten to do these movies, it's just, it boggles your mind and mine.
Well, here's the thing. I think when history is written, I think David Gordon Green's hold on Universal with first the Halloween trilogy that he did over the last few years. The first one, I think, was good, but not stupendous on any level. The Halloween Kills was very pedestrian. I think it will play very well, like just as a Halloween movie time killer. But again, miles away from anything special. And then Halloween Ends was unbelievably polarizing, which in a lot of ways blew up that franchise and his reputation as somebody who thought they could bring something interesting to the table. Somehow he must be a really good salesman, because Universal spent $400 million to obtain the rights to do three Exorcist movies. That's a lot of money. Now, if I was sitting at a table, I would say maybe $200 million, maybe $250 tops to do this.
And how about this? Let's see. How about this? Let's see him do one, and then we'll decide if we're going to do two others. Because there's nothing that I saw in the other Halloween movies, and I'm on record, I didn't like any of them. That would make me say, let's hand him over $400 million for three more movies and torture another classic that's out there that people want to see over and over again. They don't want to see a new Exorcist movie. Nobody wants to see a new Exorcist movie. Nobody wants to see Nun 2. Nobody, I mean, these movies, I just don't get it, Chuck. I know they make money. It's because people are starved for good horror movies. Just make a good horror movie.
There's a thing in the industry now, Mike. They call it the legacy sequel, right? That's what the first Halloween reboot was, sequel, whatever. They make believe the other movies after Carbon the 78 version doesn't exist, which is a bummer, because we both know Rick Rosenthal's Halloween 2 in 1980 is a really damn good sequel to Halloween. More graphic, yes, but Halloween 1 and 2 play beautifully back to back. We know Halloween H2O is a really fine movie. It's a really good movie, and it made a lot of money. And they believe it doesn't exist.
I know, and you know what's funny too? I would take Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers, over any of those three movies.
Now, here's the deal with the Exorcist franchise. If it doesn't have William Peter Blatty attached, meaning he wrote the original screenplay and book for the first one, which is the greatest horror movie of all time. It is. I would debate anybody. It is the greatest horror movie ever made, Exorcist. It supersedes the horror genre. It was nominated for, I think, 9 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. You just don't see horror movies do that. I think. And then William Peter Blatty wrote and directed Legion, Exorcist 3, which is a very good movie, and over time has gone down now as a cult classic. I say cult because it didn't do the box office that it deserved, but George C. Scott and Ed Flanders do beautiful acting in that movie. It gets under your skin. It's like reading a book. I like it a lot. But everything else, nobody's crying for we need more Exorcist movies. But they cannot help. They cannot help knowing that if they got to write big checks out, they just want a name attached, or now it's the legacy stuff. They just petrified to do anything original.
It's scary. It really is.
So why not take, if you're going to do another Halloween, when we talked about this last week, that there's a bidding war for the rights to the Halloween franchise, what form will they reboot, a sequel, whatever they do with it. But here's the thing. You could take the title of Halloween. You could take the title of The Exorcist, but you can do something completely different with it. They're petrified to do it.
You know, what's funny too, is I saw a coming out on Prime Video this weekend, a very interesting trailer of a horror movie, a slasher movie spoof. It's called Totally Killer. It's about a girl who goes back in time to 1987 and has to stop a serial killer. It's from the producers of Happy Birthday, the movie that came out, the movie we both liked. They did a sequel with
Happy Death Day.
Yeah, Happy Death Day. And so here's a concept that's kind of interesting. And the trailer plays pretty well. It, you know, the girl goes back to try to save her mother's friends from the serial killer. So, all right, Totally Killer, released on Prime Video today. Not a chance in the world it's going to see more than 50,000 views this weekend. If this would have gotten a theatrical push and marketing behind it, I would have said, you know what? I would take my daughter to go see this. This looks like something fun and different. No publicity about it at all. It's buried on Prime Video, but yet, oh my gosh, there's two girls with their heads spinning and vomit everywhere. Exorcist themes playing. Ellen Burstyn pops up. This is what we're going to get all $400 million behind. And it's still not going to perform at all. And it's going to get crushed next week.
Here's the problem with 23% positive Rotten Tomatoes and a lot of hoopla of how a lot of people are so disappointed because they didn't try to do anything original. The problem is, it was tracking at like $35 million, but I think that tracking is going to go down based on these reviews. But it's going to crater like 75% week to week because you got Taylor Swift in this way off a weekend of bad reviews. It's a big, big problem.
So people's forgotten Saw 10 came out last week. So on Monday, The Exorcist Believer will just be a figment of people's imagination that nobody's even going to care or see. Or would you rather make a movie like Barbie and really make an impact? I mean, that's what I don't get. When you're a movie producer and you're putting all this money into something, what are you doing? You can't turn a profit with this model that you're doing. It just doesn't make any sense. And to be in a board meeting where this gets okayed, it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling.
I just found this out because I watched trailer again. Five Nights at Freddy's, right? At the end of the trailer.
Yeah.
In theaters.
And Peacock. Peacock.
And Peacock. Day.
Same day.
When I saw that the other day. I got to tell you, Mike, I almost fell out of my seat.
Yep,
I go way beyond this. Like, seriously?
Well, remember, they did the same thing with Halloween, right? Halloween Ends. But it was COVID.
You could still say, the COVID. We're not dealing with that now.
Nope.
I don't get it.
It just doesn't make any sense.
They want the cake. They want to eat it too. They want every piece, actually. The theaters got to count.
And I'm telling you right now, people would go to the theaters to see that movie too. And they're cutting their face. You know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. It's disappointing. The industry continues to just kick themselves in their own groin.
I agree.
Chuck, let's move on real quick. I'm not a big movie career, but I did want to bring him up. He had popped up in a few movies and a few TV series. Dick Buckus passed away this past week, Thursday, 80 years old, the Hall of Fame, great linebacker for the Chicago Bears, who had a career in Hollywood. You can't deny, you know, he was on My Two Dads, did 27 episodes of that show. He was in a couple of movies too, like Johnny Dangerously, and he would pop up on, you know, The Love Boat and Fantasy Island and all those shows. So it was pretty, I mean, look, he's not really acting much, but you know what? I remember seeing him in Gus when I was little in that Disney movie. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's pretty cool. They got Dick Buckus to be in this movie.
Listen, I think a lot of the, I think it's always cool when an interesting, likable athlete can transcend his sport and get into features and television. Yeah, it's a bummer.
And then, you know, he teamed up with Bubba Smith a lot in their career as well, right? They did a lot of stuff together.
Correct.
Right. The TV, the Miller Lite commercials. Very likable, very approachable on screen. And it is a bummer. 80 years old. He was in Gremlins too, right? He played himself in Gremlins too.
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah.
What other movie news you got?
I forgot to touch on this last week, but James Cameron was at a convention and he surprised the crowd and did a screening of the Abyss off of DCP. And he stated that there's a 4K transfer and it will be dropped soon on Blu-ray and streaming, which I think is great news because The Abyss from 1989, a big movie, a terrific film, especially the special edition, which is the only version you should watch, I've not been able to watch this on a streaming service. It's never been on Blu-ray. It's hard to find on DVD. It was made many, many years ago, I think at a 4:3 aspect ratio, but I've been waiting for decades for a high definition version of Cameron's The Abyss from 89. It really has become a forgotten movie, Mike. And I don't know why. It makes no sense, but I'm happy with this news.
It was big news back in the day too, right? 1989. And he released a version on Laserdisc that kind of blew up the Laserdisc market for a little bit.
Yeah. And I still have, you know, when I heard this in retrospect, I was saying to myself, it stars Ed Harris, right? Who's awesome in this movie, but Ed Harris primarily in his career has been a great, one of the best character actors of all time. I think that was probably his first forte as the lead, almost like Gene Hackman in The Poseidon Adventure, the lead in action movie, right? Sci-fi action movie. And he's great. I don't really understand why The Abyss has been forgotten for decades, but
It's real good news. I can't wait. Yeah, I can't wait to see the extended cut. And I've talked about it often. It took a 3-star movie and turned it into a 4-star movie. If you've never seen that extended cut, it's just a completely different last 45 minutes. And the whole tone of the movie changes dramatically on that one, just the cuts he made at the end.
Yeah, and I think it was either the end of the year or beginning of 1990, I got on a March bus from the Poconos into New York City, and I watched it on the big screen.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. I almost, like, it was almost hard to believe that footage was not in the theatrical cut, but the reality is Cameron had a contract with 20th Century Fox, and you have the power he did after, you know, Aliens, Titanic power. Yeah. And they had a contractual obligation for running time, so he nubbed his whole third act off, which is incredible.
Now people wish that he'd lost that power now, and maybe some of his Avatar movies would be a little more manageable in the theaters. Yeah, but it's hard to believe nowadays if he made The Abyss today, we would get the 3-hour version. No bars, no holds barred. But maybe Paramount, some of these other studios should say, all right, your movies need to be out 2 hours and 30 minutes now, Jim, because enough is enough with Avatar 8.
I agree with that. Here are a couple other ones. It was announced yesterday, Universal Pictures has greenlit a Martin Luther King Jr. biopic directed by Chris Rock. It's based on a specific novel. Rock will not only direct Mike, but he will produce, and Steven Spielberg will serve as an executive producer. This must be a really good, interesting novel that he has obviously passionate about and pitched Universal, and they've agreed to finance this project. One other thing, Kevin Costner, his new Western Horizon, an American story, will be 4 movies, with the first 2 films being released next year, 2 months apart. That's, I guess, why Costner soured on the success of the Yellowstone TV show, because I guess he had a passion to do these Westerns theatrically. Very interesting.
Very interesting. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that series now too, because, you know, it feels like if he's not on it, I mean, what are we doing here? Right. I mean, I love that show, but I couldn't imagine it.
If Matthew McConaughey does come aboard, it'll be a little different. Hopefully they won't kill Costner's character off. I don't think he's a and then maybe they could sort of make amends where he comes back at least occasionally. I don't know how that will work. Yeah, we'll see. By the way, you get a chance. Yesterday, they released a trailer. Miramax released a trailer to The Beekeeper, which is a revenge actioner with Jason Statham, directed by David Ayers, who did Suicide Squad and Fury. I got to tell you, Mike, it felt so equalizer-ish. Like, I enjoyed the hell out of watching this trailer. If you get a chance, give it a whirl.
It's funny you say that. I want to see that. And I also saw a great trailer, too, for the Netflix movie Leave the World Behind with Julia Roberts and Ethan Hawke. It's a disaster movie, end of the world type movie. You should go check it out. It's really over the top. It's like, and again, you watching and you're like, what? I mean, why isn't this a Thanksgiving release in theaters? And it's so frustrating because some of the special effects and what you see is like, wow, this would play awesomely on the big screen back in the '80s. But check it out. It's really good. Kevin Bacon's in it. Mahershala Ali's in it as well. It looks like a real good thriller action, end of the world type movie. So, we'll check it out. Matthew Lillard coming up in just a little bit. And we'll talk some Scream movies. What else you got here as far as, movie news?
I just saw that Elizabeth Shue, birthday, as we speak, 60 years old, almost hard to believe. Elizabeth Shue, Ali from The Karate Kid, co-starred opposite Tom Cruise in Cocktail, Leaving Las Vegas with Nicolas Cage.
I'm glad you brought that up. Oscar nominated.
Obviously a huge film in her career. It was cool to see her do an appearance on Cobra Kai. I've always been a big fan. I think she's tremendously likable, appealing. I wish her nothing but the best of luck.
Yeah, I liked her a lot. Better career than her brother, that's for sure. But I did like, I mean, she's in that new show. She was in that show that was on Showtime, too, about Uber. She played the mom in that, too. She's good, always good, and you're right. You can't do a Cobra Kai reboot without having her pop up. Ally with an eye definitely needs. Funny, you bring up the Leaving Las Vegas and what it meant for her career, but it's not really like her career took off after that, Chuck.
It wasn't like she was the Emma Stone of her generation. It wasn't or Jennifer Lawrence, where the A-list scripts landed on her desk right away. I mean, she probably had to fight tooth and nail to get every part that she had, but a very likable person. Just a couple this week in movie history. It's October 4th, 1962. Dr. No premieres in theaters of First Forte on the big screen of 007. Sean Connery was the star. Who would have thought 27 movies later? You know, there's been some rumors. I just think they're rumors that Chris Nolan has serious interest in directing.
Oh my God, that'd be awesome.
The next James Bond movie. But here's the thing. There's been a lot of fan talk about let's cast Henry Cavill as 007. I got to tell you, I would do it. Like if I was running the show.
I would love that.
I think he would be perfect because he has a huge fan base. He was discarded as Superman. Obviously, he should have did more than just the Man of Steel solo Superman movie. What a botch up job at DC and Warner Brothers. He would be a good. I would cast him as 007. I would
too. I would absolutely do that. He's good looking. He's young. Inject some energy into it.
And look at the fight scene in that Mission Impossible movie with Tom Cruise. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. I'm a fan. Henry Cavill. Here's one. October this week in movie history, 1978, Midnight Express is released in theaters. Alan Parker directs. Oliver Stone wrote that screenplay.
Brad Davis, the star.
Davis was the star. What a unique actor he was, right?
He passed away of AIDS a little bit later on. Yeah.
Yes, he did. If I said to you, Mike, they don't make movies like Midnight Express anymore.
That was one of those movies I watched on HBO maybe 80 times when I was young because it kept playing it, and it was such a great movie.
And I got to tell you, back then, I remember so many people in my neighborhood would say, same thing. They'd watch it on HBO, and they would say, you see that movie? Yeah. What a great movie. I remember like the word of mouth, like people being like, because this is an intense, it's a hard-hitting movie. It's a hard R movie.
It's a tough watch, yeah.
It is a tough watch because, even Brad, he's not the most likable character. He's just in a horrible position. But what a terrific movie.
Yeah, I loved it. A great revenge movie too. It really plays in a lot of levels. And yeah, Oliver Stone, obviously a part of it. A true story too, based on a true story.
I got one more. This week in movie history.
You keep saying you got one more, and then there's like three more. You know, how many you got for real? Popping up in your head?
I got two more.
And he's got two more now. They keep growing.
No, actually, I got three more. This week in movie history, Boys from Brazil, 1978, opens in theaters. I always found that to be a really interesting movie. It's flawed. It's not perfect. But two of the greatest actors of all time, Gregory Peck as a Nazi, and Laurence Olivier as a Nazi hunter. I think my mother took me as a little boy to see that in theaters. I always remember the Doberman Pinscher scene at the end. Right?
So you're telling me Midnight Express and Boys from Brazil were released on the same weekend? Is that what you're telling me?
Same week. Yep, okay. Same weekend.
All right. Amazing. So what else you got?
I got one more. 1984, October 5th. Teachers is released in theaters. Yeah. I saw that movie about seven times in a theater. It played at the Avenue Movie Theater in Brooklyn, New York. A lot of people in my neighborhood would go back to see that movie. I love it. It mixes tones from dramatic, right, and has a lot of social poignant commentary with wacky comedy. But I love Nick Nolte. He was going through, you know, some rough periods, patches in his life at the time. He looks a little haggard, to say the least, on screen. He's terrific. Phil Beth Williams is really good. Ralph Macchio is in the movie. Crispin Glover, Morgan Freeman, Lee Grant. What a cast. Alan Parker directed that movie.
You forgot about Rieger. Rieger's in it. Judd Hirsch. Very good.
And he's great. Exactly. He's everybody in that movie.
The movie should have been better with all the talent. It should have been good, but it should have been better.
Because what it does is it wants to be one thing, one frame and another the next. Yeah. Having said that, it has a lot of good messages about the public school system that I thought were pretty interesting. I still think it's a good movie.
And I haven't watched it in a while. I wonder how well it holds up now, considering what we're going through.
No, it holds up pretty well.
Yeah,
I watched it. It holds up pretty well, I think.
Coming up, we got Matthew Lillard will join the show. Chuck had a chance to talk to the Scream star in a bit. We'll talk some Scream in a second, but get me back in the theater this week, Chuck. Pick a year we're going to go traveling in.
Any year?
Well, in the 80s and 90s. Let's make it fun.
Okay, we'll go with 87.
1987 this year. This week in 1987, we had... All right, here's your new... Here's your new movies. You know, cult classic Near Dark comes out this weekend in 1987. Okay, cool. Nobody was going to see that.
I caught that on DVD.
But that's a good movie. Like Father Like Son comes out, Chuck. Thoughts on the Kirk Cameron Dudley Moore movie, which opened at number two.
Okay, those body switching movies after Big. The one with Fred Savage and Judge Ron Holmes was a lot better. Here's the deal. I'm going to be blunt with you. I'm not Kirk Cameron on the big screen. It's not a very good movie.
All right. In its second week, but not in a lot of theaters, The Princess Bride was playing and starting to gain an audience, Chuck. Also, in week number three, you had The Pickup Artist, Hellraiser, Fatal Attraction, and The Principal. Fatal Attraction. Wow.
Fatal Attraction. Almost like The Exorcist, really hit a nerve with the general public. And that movie became a phenomenal pop culture hit, rated R.
And still,
what a movie.
And a couple of summer movies still in theaters making some cash. Stakeout and Dirty Dancing were still in theaters. So I'm going to ask you now, Chuck. Here you go. Fatal Attraction, The Principal, Stakeout, Dirty Dancing, Hellraiser, Like Father Like Son, Near Dark, Princess Bride. You've got $8 and you're going to the theaters. What are you going to see?
You're going to think I'm crazy. I'm going to go see The Principal, and I'm going to tell you why. Because it was a really cool movie to just chill out in a movie theater, watch with the crowd. It's a pulp B movie. Jim Belushi was a lot of fun. Lou Gossett Jr. was good in that movie also. It wasn't made to win any awards. It was just made to It was a good revenge movie. And obviously, listen, it's not Fatal Attraction, but if I had to take a time machine back to see that movie, yeah, I would.
Well, Chuck, if I had to take a time machine and go back to December 20th, 1996, I'd be sitting in the theater next to a packed crowd and saying, all right, let's see what Wes Craven can do with Scream, written by Kevin Williams. And of course, Wes Craven coming up with one of his better movies. That was Freddy's New Nightmare. Scream comes out. The movie theater's packed. And people are going nuts, Chuck. It was one of the best movie-going experiences I've had in the decade of the 90s, and mainly because the movie is a four-star classic. It teeters on comedy and horror. It's bloody. It's scary. It's funny. It's got a great cast that they all become likable. Scream is a classic, Chuck, and it's hard to believe that it's almost 30 years old now. Scream came out, and Matthew Lillard and Skeet Ulrich, obviously some classic ending to that film. Just a great, great movie. And it they never reached that peak. There's some high notes in the other ones, but Scream, it may be one of the 10 best horror movies of all time.
Listen, here's the thing. I think what made that movie work to the highest of levels, one, a fresh screenplay, right?
Yep.
Kevin Williamson, a terrific cast, a great ending, a great opening. And I think Wes Craven was at the top of his craft, right? Yeah. I think he was at the top of the craft, and he knew all the nuances, and he realized that this was fresh material that he really could sink his teeth into. And yeah, it was a great, great movie.
It really was fantastic, and it's a one-of-a-kind experience in the theaters that I don't know if we'll ever make it there again. And it was just a year later that the band got together, Wes Craven, Kevin Williamson, and the cast in 1997, December 12th, another Christmas time movie. I mean, you got all the main players come back again, new killer, Ghostface is back. Look,
and they kill off a character that you hated being seen killed off.
Yes, you do. And this one, I mean, obviously this one's on a college campus, right? This is the college campus one. And then the third one's the movie set. This one I liked mainly because I thought Timothy Oliphant, I mean, spoiler alert, I mean, people have seen this movie by now, right?
Yeah,
I mean, sure. Laurie Metcalf, I thought that was a nice little switch of the genre a little bit. I don't think it's great. I think it's scary, and it's fun to see familiar faces playing it's pretty an assembly line horror movie, but everybody's back. There's no reason not to like this movie.
Here's the thing. Okay, I'm going to have a different opinion. I think this is just as good as the original film.
You do? I can't go that far.
But here's the difference. When I walked into theater to see Scream 1, like, I didn't know what I was going to see, right? Scream 2 is a lot more hyped. So it was a different experience. But I do think that those characters are so well written and you like them so much.
But that is true.
And it was still fresh. Like, you know, who's Ghostface? It's still fresh. So I really did like this movie just as much as the original film. I actually think in terms of horror movies, it's one of the best sequels of a franchise horror ever, man. I really like it a lot.
Unnecessary kill, though, in Scream 2. That's a downer. And I don't know if I recovered. Maybe that's why I'm not as high on it as you, because it's unnecessary. Scream 3, on a movie based about making the movie that the movie was based on. There's a couple of new characters in this too. You got Patrick Dempsey pops up, and you know, it's good. It's not great. Terrible haircut for Courtney Cox. Very distracting in this film. Parker Posey's pretty good in it, Chuck, you know, in a different kind of role for her. But again, this is where the tread on the tires is starting to come off. Even though it has a new screenwriter, Kevin Williamson didn't write this one.
And it just feels that.
Yeah, you can feel that. Yes.
Here's the thing with Scream 3. It was a hit, and I like the movie. I like it, but it has pacing issues. It sort of meanders and lumbers along, where the first two, beginning to end, those movies move very well. I think some of the new characters are not as connectable as the first two films. I did like it, and it made money. But it's not as good as one or two.
And then, you talk to the average person, nobody even remembers Scream 4 came out to be honest with you, Chuck, it did make $97 million, but
I'm going to disagree. I don't really understand why this movie gets hammered by some. I think it's good.
It's okay.
I know I like it. I think it's good.
And it's unnecessary to say, at least in fact, I think people rediscover it because when Scream that came out in 2011, 10 years mm-hmm. after Scream 3, 11 years after Scream 3. And then to pay
tribute to Siskel and Ebert, thumbs down?
Thumbs down. Yeah, it's so forgettable. No. Chuck, it's so forgettable. I don't even remember who the killer is in it. I don't remember who the killer is. I just rewatched it not too long ago because I watched all the movies together. It's just, to me,
Emma Roberts is the star, correct?
Oh, yeah, Emma Roberts. Now I remember who the killer is, spoiler alert, because there's probably people listening to this.
I remember seeing it, and I remember, like, the aftermath, especially years later, how people like, oh, you know, this Scream 4 is not a good movie. I don't see it that way. I think it's good.
Now, I will tell you, I enjoyed Scream, the actual Scream 5, which came out a couple of years ago. I thought the new cast members were very good, including mm-hmm. Jenna Ortega, who plays Wednesday, and her sister. And I thought Jack Quaid was good, Dennis's son. I thought the old cast coming in, now again, has unnecessary kill in this movie, but it's scary. It's a little bit original because of the new characters. So this one held me pretty good because I like the two girls, Chuck, in the leads here. And then having Neve Campbell and the other stars come back. Granted, an unnecessary kill in this again, but I thought it was I thought it was a good reboot.
Okay, take a deep breath, okay? You ready? Scream 4 is a better movie for me.
You're crazy.
No, I'm not. I'm serious. Listen, this would be like, again, to pay homage to Siskel and Ebert, this would be like my thumb is barely a tweak up. It's not a thumbs down, but barely a tweak up. It feels flat. This movie feels flat to me.
I didn't feel that way. You didn't like Melissa Barrera and Jenna Ortega? You didn't like the two new leads?
I they feel boxed in. It doesn't breathe. The movie doesn't breathe for me. It doesn't feel like I'm having a good time watching a Scream movie.
Shelton coming back
it feels okay.
Okay.
I was slightly disappointed. I got to be honest with you.
Well, I thought Scream 6, which came out this year, was a little flat in and of itself. It almost felt too much like Jason Takes Manhattan for me, Chuck. Implausible.
I like it. It's brutal. Like the stabbing scenes. Yeah. Like, holy cow. It was especially the last act. It's brutal. I did like it. I liked it better than the one that came before.
I can't agree with that. And it was good to see Hayden Panettiere come back as well.
Let me ask you a question. Are you Siskel or Ebert?
I don't think either one or either one. But I would give Ebert, I always thought, had better reviews, so I'll be him. If you're going to put him in order, obviously Scream's up top. Scream 2, to me, is Scream.
I
would go Scream, Scream 2. Yeah. Then the new Scream, then uh-huh. Scream 3, then Scream 6, and Scream 4, to me, is a total waste of time.
I would do them in chronological order, except I would reverse the last two.
Well, Matthew Lillard's only in the first one, took off, Chuck, because I got to tell you, we talked a little bit about it last week. I think he's very appealing on screen in mostly everything he's ever done. And whether it be Summer Catch or Scooby-Doo as Shaggy, he's always good. It's just, he seems like he's Matthew Lillard, right? On the screen. That's who he is.
And listen, he was in The Descendants. He was in Trouble with the Curve. Listen, all comic actors are good, serious actors. And you'll see in the interview, 160 acting credits as a screen credits or TV and screen as an actor. That's impressive career, Mike.
Let's take a listen to it.
Very special guest on the line today, Matthew Lillard. Most people would know Matthew from the original Scream movie, who was absolutely awesome. The voice of Shaggy in Scooby-Doo, both live action and animated. Matthew is not only a working actor who has 160 acting credits, which is a very impressive feat, and really is the definition, in my opinion, of a hardworking actor, especially with this ongoing actor strike, which we hope is resolved very shortly. Matthew also is an entrepreneur doing a lot of different things off screen, which we're going to talk about in a few moments. I got one question to start the interview off with you, Matthew. As a young kid, what lit your fire in terms of wanting to perform, whether it be an actor or do other stuff in the public eye? Was it a specific movie you watched in a movie theater? Was it a TV show, a play? Give me sort of a broad spectrum of that.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me, Chuck. I appreciate it.
Sure.
I love that question. I'd much rather have a question like that than just come out here and sort of start shilling my company. But yeah, the thing that changed my life is that I have a severe learning disability. I was a kid that wasn't good at anything in school. And it wasn't until my dad said, you can either take a typing class or an acting class. The idea was that taking an acting class would make me a better salesman as I grew up. And my dad's like, you're going to be a great salesman. You better take a class and be able to be comfortable in front of people. And so I said yes to the acting class. And then he made me take the typing class for the next year. But look, the acting class to me was the one place I was successful. It was the one place where I had adults, parents, teachers go, oh, hey, that was good. And for a kid, I was an obese teenager, learning disability, glasses, braces, and I was a transplant from Detroit, Michigan into Orange County, California. So for me, finding something as a young kid when you're struggling that you're good at can change your life. And so I always say to parents, I always say to anyone that'll listen, you may have a kid outside the box, celebrate that kid just as much as you would the quarterback or the captain of the cheerleading team. Like, if you want your kid to have passion, and that passion can change their life, no matter what it's for.
I like that a lot. You know, that's why I always said, the TV show Glee, I think that was an important part of pop culture because it introduced what you say. Not everybody has to be a star athlete. There's a lot of people shine in many different areas, and that's a good example. Just curious off the bat, what did your father do for a living?
My dad was a serial entrepreneur and started a biopharmaceutical company, a very small biopharmaceutical company. Started as a UAW worker, then started selling Red Wing shoes down in Pittsburgh. Went to Southern California to start selling clinical assays, and then started his own company. He has dementia, so anytime I get a chance to talk about my dad, I'll take it.
Okay, I appreciate that. Now, in 91, you started your film career in a blink, and you miss it moment in a movie called Ghoulies 3. Now, when I think of that movie, I say to myself in retrospect or reflection, going to a video store and looking at the video box covers and being sold on that, saying, boy, I want to see that movie. And before we get into the main topic, which is your entrepreneurship and your current project, which I think is really cool, just give me a reflection on the way the industry as a whole in the culture has changed from that point in your life, 91, people walking into a video store to rent a movie like Ghoulies 3, which I think is super cool. Boy, oh boy, Matthew, do I miss that day, to now we have streaming. The industry's changed dramatically. Now, we're not going to speak specific films that you might be in to promote because it's against the SAG rule, but just give me in your initial thought on how quickly the film industry has changed in the last 3 or 4 years, because I'm an entrepreneur myself, and I help run a nonprofit movie theater, own a few ice cream parlors and a smoothie shop. I know about business, but I have a love of movies. I've been doing this spot for decades, and I've never seen an industry change so dramatically over a 3-year period like the Hollywood industry has changed. Just give me your thoughts, and then we'll bounce into why you're on the air.
I love these questions, so thank you for taking the time to ask me them. The industry has changed in a way, in such a dramatic way, because what's happened, in my opinion, is that the industry used to be run by people that really cared about making films, right? Yes, there was a business, always a business to it, but back in the 80s and 90s, there was this need to make good movies. There was a sort of a there was a sense of honor in the industry where people would be like, okay, I value actors. I'm going to give an actor, I'm going to pay the actor what they're worth. And then the next movie, we're going to pay them a little more because they deserve a little more because there is a relationship building, right? I think what happened back then was that relationships were essential. And what's happened now is that the corporate mindset of coming in, making a profit at all costs, delivering high margins on every single piece, and then on top of it, really not interested in hitting a single or a double, but every piece of media, they're always aiming for a home run. So that's why we continually see these superhero movies. That's why you get, I think, the lowest, in a lot of times, the acting isn't essential. The writing isn't essential. What's essential is that we sell Underoos, that we sell Happy Meals, and that we turn a profit no matter what in the name of corporate sort of forward.
I'll give you an example of what you just bounced on. When I was in the 1980s, when I used to go to the movies, I used to go by myself all the time. And I remember going into a movie theater in 84, and it was a double feature, and I had no idea what the second movie would be, right? And it wound up being a movie called Night of the Comet. And that movie was a very inventive movie. It starred an actress named Catherine Mary Stewart, who I wound up interviewing at my movie theater for consecutive years, right? And I say to myself, and I reflect, movies with imagination, movies that had love from both cast and director, like that film, like a lot of the stuff produced in the 80s and 90s, is not made anymore. And if you look, and I've brought this up, I think somewhere along the line when the Avengers Endgame made almost $2 billion worldwide, I think a lot of people in the industry said, hey, we only want to make movies that make $1 billion. And like you said, the single and the double, the portfolio, the diversification in film, where you go to a multiplex and certain people can see a romantic comedy and certain people can see a comedy and certain people can see a small independent drama. And then if you want to see superhero movies, and I like superhero movies, I love Batman, but I don't want to see every movie a superhero movie, because the people in the industry who were supposed to be asleep at the wheel and supposed to be smart and knew what they were doing drove the car down a very bad road. And I think the industry is going to have a hard time recovering. And as much as I do like streaming for older shows, I don't think the day-to-day model is a good thing. I think respect to theaters is important. I think people should go to the movies for the cultural experience, to have a conversation after the movie. The best experience I've ever had in a movie, Matthew, 93, drove to New York City, saw Jurassic Park at the Ziegfeld, who at the time was the largest single-screen movie theater in the United States. 1,150 people sell out at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. To me, I tell my daughter, I have one daughter, she's 17, and I say to her, you will never have an experience like I had in 93, because to have 1,150 people going bananas watching a movie was an incredible experience. So I appreciate your time on that. Now, let's talk for the next 5 minutes of what you're doing in terms of entrepreneur. I know you're a big tabletop fantasy guy. You have a new whiskey line coming out. The two have been merged. You know a lot more about it. So the floor is yours. Explain to the folks at home what you're currently involved in and why you're so passionate. And I wish you the best of luck on this. Go ahead.
Thanks, man. Yeah. So what we're doing is we created a high-end premium spirit experience based around the delivery of a fantasy story. So each drop, right, contains within it a story that's 16 pages long. So it's Quest and Whiskey. It goes on sale this Friday. You can get on the early access list at questsendwhiskey.com. And hopefully, I know we're sort of running out of time here, but, sorry. So the idea is that, instead of competing with every whiskey brand out there, we're like, okay, how can we sort of find our way in to creating a whiskey a brand that's built specifically for a fandom. And it's funny because we're talking about movies so much, which is sort of how we built our company. The idea of Fine Familiar Spirits is that, like we were just discussing, you can have a horror story, you can have a superhero story, you can have a small independent movie. Like, that's what the movie studio does. They apply what they do to different genres. So what we're doing at Fine Familiar Spirits is that we will continually build high-end premium spirit experiences based on fandoms. So finding fans where they're at and building something highly bespoke. So it comes with a story. It comes with a piece of lore or legend. It comes with a premium spirit. So we're not just picking up, you know, swill and turning the highest profit margin we can. We're going out. We're investing in incredible whiskey. We're investing in incredible storytellers. So Quest Send Whiskey has 16 different bottles spread out over 4 years. Each one of those bottles, each one of those drops, has a character associated with it. So the first four are paladin, rogue, and then you have a warlock, and then dragon. And so each one of those has a different flavor profile, and it continues the story, right? So our first one's paladin. It comes out, we go until this week, which is nerve-wracking. But it comes out, and there's like, you know, the story opens up with Saren of the Pit. That's her name. She's a paladin of this god Inxa. And Inxa is, and Saren is in this battle to win her freedom. And that's where we meet the character. And then from there, we continue on this journey. But each bottle has a different flavor profile that's based on the character and what's happening in the story. So it's the same thing we were talking about with creating something for fans and creating something that has passion behind it, that isn't about turning a profit. It's about delivering on an experience. And that's what we're trying to do with Fine Familiar Spirits and Quest Send.
Very good. Now, last question for you. It feels like you're re-energized. It feels like this is a new plateau in your life. The last question I have, the difference between what you're doing here as an entrepreneur versus a working actor in terms of the energy it takes, the excitement, and I was watching an interview you did where you said that, you know, as an actor, you're sort of a hired gun. You know, you take direction from a director. You're there to do a job, read lines, do the best characterization of that character, make it memorable as possible. But in what you're doing now, you have more creative control. How does that feel? As a person who wakes up every morning to do?
Yeah, it's the best. I'm on a passion. I'm building something for myself. I'm building something out of passion. I'm building something that is using the other side of my brain. I mean, look, if you're an actor waiting for the opportunity for somebody to give you work, there's this expression called, you know, that I think Joe Biden used actually in his re-election campaign of the dignity of work, right? This idea that there's, like, as men and women, we find dignity in having a job. Well, as an actor, yes. If I have a movie a year, that's a great year. But that's only 2 months of work. That's a month of work, maybe three, you know, maybe a week, 2 weeks. And so the idea of waiting around and spending a life waiting for somebody else to give me permission to do what I love, like, that is untenable. So this idea of creating, you know, I started a company 5 years ago called Beetle and Grimms. Beetle and Grimms, we make high-end box editions for gaming in this world. And I learned in that, I really love the art of building something. I love putting energy into something and seeing it return. It's a lot like doing independent theater, like going off and doing a play. Like, you write down a date, and all of a sudden you start putting together these elements to make things happen. And so this idea of being able to do that here with Quest Send and Fine Familiar Spirits is couldn't be more rewarding.
Very good. And is there a website that fan base can go to learn more about this, Matthew?
Yeah, if you go to questandwhiskey.com, you can sign up for alerts as to what we're building next. We go on sale Wednesday. A pre-sale goes on sale this Wednesday, and there are 31,000 people waiting for 5,000 bottles. So we've had great success sort of getting the word out. But if you're interested, 9 a.m. Pacific time, you sign up for that. We'll send you a link, and first come, first serve. Hopefully people you know, if you're interested, check it out. We've got all kinds of, we've got more information there, more of the story. And we're doing these other fandoms. We're doing these other verticals, which we're really excited to share in the 2024.
I got to tell you, Matthew, I think you're an awesome dude. I appreciate your time. Best of luck in all future endeavors. And if anybody deserves it, it is you. Matthew Littered, pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Matt.
You're welcome.
All right, Chuck, another edition in the books. We'll do it all over again next week, my friend.
I'm out of breath, Mike. I enjoyed it. To the audience, thank you very much, as always, for listening.
Thanks for listening to Movie Moments with Chuck Curry and Mike Rags. Download and listen to an archived show, or be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to podcasts to hear our new episode.
Podcasts by Federated Media.